And we are back, and it is the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT 89.5 FM, the sound of your city. And we are joined by David Himbara. David Himbara is the author of Kagame's Economic Mirage and Kagame's Killing Fields, two very sobering books. He's also the former economic advisor to the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame. It's David Himbara. Are you there, sir?
Thank you so much.
We need to talk to you, David, because this is the story of Paul Kagame and his rule has become, I guess we could say, unraveled. And yet, there he stands. All of his claims about himself as a hero, liberator, various things, and then his miracle. Economic miracle, all these things have been shown to be false, but still he goes on. Now, you're the one who people really have to turn to, because you were an advisor, and by the way, highly qualified. Apparently, he didn't really appreciate your being qualified. He thought he would hire somebody who could create numbers rather than record them. Tell us, first of all, isn't he more isolated now even than the last time we talked? I think he had his anniversary, what was it, the July 4th. It's interesting, he scheduled it on the U.S. anniversary of July 4th of independence, but very few people came. Why aren't they coming?
Things have become a bit tough. Although we already said this, but then he bounces back. This man is a survivor for Kagame. Mm-hmm. But of late, I don't know if your listeners are aware, but he did something unusual. He closed the border with Uganda, mm-hmm. Meaning that Rwandans are not allowed to go to Uganda, and by extension, they cannot go to Kenya, because in order to get to reach Kenya, you have to go through Uganda. Hmm. And of course, imports and exports for Rwanda, half of it goes that route. So in other words, so he's in conflict with Uganda. He's in conflict with Burundi, and there is always Congo there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Congo. So
that's kind of hard to keep up an economic miracle going if you're not trading. Is he pulling these things out of his shirt pocket, or where does this come from?
So here we are now. Basically, as you said, when there was this anniversary of him coming to power, no one showed up from the region. Zero. Hmm. That is extraordinary. But it's partially explained by what he has done. Hmm. You can't close the border in 2019. That is insane.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there? This happened a month, 6 weeks ago, maybe 2 months that he did it. Right? Is there nothing crossing? I know that that's a truck route to the ocean. They have to go through Kenya.
There are two routes you want to use. This the one about the southern route, which is the one goes to Dar es Salaam, and that one's never been
as busy. That's a longer, less developed route, right?
Let's say that it's half and half, but the one to Kenya is quite unique for one reason. Rwanda main exports coffee and tea. Mm-hmm. So Mombasa, Kenya, is where those two go through, and there is a trading exchange. So Mombasa is not only a port for export and import, but also coffee and tea. There is a kind of trade there. The Rwandan tea is traded on the Mombasa exchange.
Uh-huh.
So you cannot take Rwandan tea to the slab and then ship it upward to Mombasa to be traded. Mm-hmm. That is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So this man has shot himself in the foot.
It's, by the way, you were an advisor to him. Surely there are people saying this cannot continue. Something will have to give, right?
Right now, the thing is, you see, when he closed the border, that's the same time that he made that astonishing remark that about the killing of Seth Ndashonga.
Ah, I'm glad you raised that matter. Yes, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a meeting where he mentioned that Uganda was partially the reason why Ndashonga was killed, because he was associating himself with Ugandans who were plotting against Rwanda, according to Kagame. So now, Kagame now says that Uganda is still doing the same thing.
Mm.
That all these, the RNC and other groups are operating in Uganda. So that's why he decided, without showing evidence, he decided that he's closing the border to punish Uganda. Now, the funny thing is that if that was done, he closed the border February 27th. We are now in August.
Mm-hmm.
The Ugandans ignored him, Rwanda, completely. They have been telling their businesses that, look, Rwanda is a small market. Look for markets elsewhere. So Kagame had assumed that the Ugandans would kneel down and beg.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they have ignored him.
You know, I should ask you this or add to that, that he always talks as though he's a superpower. He doesn't talk like the leader of a country of 10 million people that is not exactly a going concern. He talks like, as you, one of your articles, he says to South Africa has to change and or normalize relations with him or else.
No, I don't.
Does he think he has orange hair and weighs 200 pounds, sits in a White House? What?
No, Phil, never mind those African countries. Last year, Kagame blocked some article, basically, the trade with the U.S. Kagame blocked some used clothes or something.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are traded for the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
Thereby abusing the trade arrangement with the U.S. This AGOA that allows African countries to export their textiles.
Yes. Having traveled in Africa, I noticed that a lot. You would see championship jerseys for teams that didn't win the championship.
So the U.S. And AGOA doesn't have tariffs on certain articles like textile.
Mm-hmm.
So when he blocked textiles from the U.S., they said, look, you can't block this because then you're going to be expelled from AGOA. It has to be a two-way traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, go jump. So the United States suspended Rwanda from AGOA. So what are you saying when you talk about Uganda or South Africa? That's nothing to him.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary ego. This And you're one of the few people who's actually tried to analyze him. This is David Himbara, by the way. He's got two great books, Kagame's Economic Mirage, actually more than two, but, and Kagame's Killing Fields. He's also the former economic advisor to President Kagame of Rwanda. Just going back for a moment, this, the matter of Seth Sendashonga, I wanted to ask you a detail about that. I was in Nairobi when Seth Sendashonga, the former interior minister of Rwanda under Paul Kagame, was assassinated in 1998. Now, he was part of the demonstration that there was going to be a new order and it was going to be democratic and it was going to be ethnically mixed leadership, etc. But he raised the issue of murders of Rwandans and got in bad trouble with Kagame. But bringing that around to when they decided to kill him, and we're hearing, and Kagame says now, well, we did that because he was talking to Uganda. Did he forget that he'd tried to kill him the year before? He already, you know, he was shot twice.
Yeah.
So what was, when they shot him the first time, what was that about? If they shot him the second time because he's talking to Uganda. Incidentally, he left out something. Seth Sendashonga was also talking to the United Nations International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, saying he would like to testify.
Yeah.
Kagame didn't mention that. But maybe that was a reason.
Yes. Yeah, you see, Sendashonga went through a lot, you know, as Minister of Interior. He witnessed that massacre in Chibeho.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he ever recovered from that, even though he, you know, he kept trying to get along with the government. But I think he realized that there is no way that you could turn that government around, mm-hmm. Towards a kind of sensible path, and of course that's when he decided to go to Kenya, he left Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that Sendashonga wanted to talk about. And he was talking about, you know, to human rights organizations, the government, yes. And he was willing to talk to the United Nations.
Yes.
So the Uganda story is an add-on, a convenient explanation by Kagame, who was looking for something to attack Uganda with.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to establish that Uganda has been destabilizing Rwanda all these years.
Yeah. Yes, he always blames his neighbors. It was Congo, it was Burundi.
Yeah.
We're speaking to David Himbara. And David, I have to ask you about, you have fought very hard to get the facts straight, because there is a tendency in the Western media to describe Rwanda as an example, as one of the best economies, etc. And you've said, and I don't know the precise language, and I'm going to ask you to use it, but they have, you've indicated that Zimbabwe, who is often spoken of as pretty much the bottom of the heap in terms of an economy, is actually a better economy, in better shape than Rwanda. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
You mean Z comes before R?
Phil. It's extremely bizarre what happens to my beautiful continent. I just cannot figure it out. So here is Zimbabwe. It's just been declared a middle-income economy, despite its mess. Mm-hmm. It's a gross national national income per capita,
mm-hmm.
is 1,500. Which is double Rwanda. Rwanda is 773.
So it's double Rwanda.
Yes. But here is Zimbabwe now, this president, going to Rwanda to study.
Yeah.
To study how to develop his economy.
This is politics is theater.
it's quite insane. But anyhow, you know, here is the thing. And you know, I'm writing another book on this subject for one particular reason. Since 2000 to 2020, which is next year, one has been implementing what we call the Vision 2020. Vision 2020 was supposed to have made Rwanda a middle-income economy.
Oh, you mean it's overdue?
Yeah, so
it'll arrive any moment.
Yeah, so it's here now. It's here. But, you know, but Rwanda actually, apart from Sudan and Burundi, which are in conflict, they are fragile economies, Rwanda is the poorest. Mm-hmm. The region. If we use this $3.90 a day, population of a country that is living under $3.20 is how we measure a middle income economy.
Mm-hmm.
How well it's doing, lower middle income economy.
Mm-hmm.
When we use this on Rwanda, 79% are poor.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this? But my book, though, is not. It's focusing less on Rwandan leadership and more on the donors that have been praising this as Africa success story.
Mm-hmm.
And still, I have found that donors have pumped in $20 billion. It's Rwanda since Kagame was in power.
Mm-hmm.
So where is this money? Where did this money go with the population?
Mm-hmm.
That is almost 80%
mm-hmm.
poor. 16% of the rural population does not have electricity.
Say that percentage again. What?
The people without electricity.
80%?
No, in rural Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
16%, only 16%.
Oh my God.
Have access to electricity in rural Rwanda.
Well, they're going to miss out when all the basketball games are on television.
Yeah.
By the way, we're speaking to David Himbaro, and I want to ask you about that. I mean, there is such a thing in politics as soft power. And some have raised the issue, and Mondo Weiss is one of those, an interesting internet site that follows these things, that there's a sports washing that goes on for countries favored by the U.S. primarily. And the NBA, for reasons known to them, have decided to spend a lot of time with the president of Rwanda. By the way, you mentioned Rwandans can't travel. He really travels. As a matter of fact, you reverse it and say occasionally he visits Rwanda. But can you? What are your thoughts about the idea that they're sports washing him?
Well, you see, basically, we have to give him a credit for marketing himself. An American historian mentioned something that I found very interesting. She mentioned that all the former presidents, she was looking at the United States, former presidents, that they try to remain relevant when they leave office. Kagame, on his own, independently, grasped this insight. He has recruited all his former leaders who want to remain relevant. They have foundation. They need to make great speeches about success stories. That is how he roped in Bill Clinton, Tony Blair. Then he has extended this now
photo ops
into sports personality.
Uh-huh.
He goes to their meetings, and gives them money, to do things.
Mm-hmm.
In Rwanda, make great speeches and make money. This is how the Blair and Clinton make money. So they need Rwanda, just like Rwanda needs them.
Uh-huh.
This is what Kagame figured out. So he's really around the year, he goes on this speaking circuit with them. He's their teammate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So forget the whole idea that it's imperialists that are pulling the you know. Now it's the tail.
Well, finally, somebody's explained that to me. That
oh my God!
You know, of course, you were close to him, so you. By the way, David Himbara is very well qualified to discuss because you used to work in the same room. So
no, you know,
you have a rough idea.
No,
rough, I guess, is the key word.
It took me a long time. You know, I always try to understand why does Clinton, Tony Blair, David Cameron, all these guys who leave power,
mm-hmm.
why would they go to a guy like that? You know? Initially we thought that, oh, it's because they have this guilt about genocide. Oh, it's imperialists wanting to get a piece of the action of Congo. But imperialists can go to Congo on their own without Rwanda. You know? I struggled trying to figure out what this is until I got that piece of writing about what American presidents do when they retire. They try to make money. They try to make to remain relevant in the limelight.
Mm.
So these two, a guy like Clinton and Blair, they have this foundation of fixing health in the third world. Mm-hmm. Tony Blair wants to fix the government. so there is you know, and of course, each one has made on an annual basis. You know, there is an account says that Clinton and Miss and Mrs. Clinton have made $156 million from speeches.
Yes.
Tony Blair makes a speech of 300 pounds in half an hour. So what do you talk about?
It's very addicting. It's like cocaine.
So what is he going to talk about? Hey, I fixed Rwanda. I fixed Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
I am an advisor to Kagame. There you go.
Yes. Well, David Himbara, you say this is going to be your new book.
I want to find out where the $20 billion that went to Rwanda, where did it go?
Yes.
Since only 16% of rural Rwanda have power. And where did this money go? It doesn't seem to have even increased power by, 10 megawatts.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not.
Well, that's... this is a good mystery, but I'm glad you're going to work on it. It's David Himbara. And please, just write David Himbara, and you get all the necessary leadership you need on this issue. David, thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank you so much.
It's good to talk to you. Bye-bye. It's Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM, Sound of Your City. And we are on Facebook, and we are on SoundCloud.